3, 2, Love Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Joe Cristiano, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, your radio of reason and independent streaming internet radio station at Libertarian Voice, broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma to around the world. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Thursday morning, November 22nd. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. This time is now 6:31 a.m. Central Standard Time in the good old USA. Liberty Talk Radio is your antidote to popular talk radio. Here you are expected to do more than just listen. You are expected to think. Although we broadcast from the United States, libertarian principles of individual freedom and responsibility are universal and apply to your area of residence, be it New York, Bangkok, Berlin, or Stalingrad. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought and dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Now, on to our program. Well, good morning, everyone. During this live broadcast, we invite you to call 646-652-4620, and we'll take your comments while on the air. At other times, you may call 903-551-2186 to leave a voice message. Of course, you can send us email at any time to comments@libertytalkradio.com. That's comments@libertytalkradio.com. In addition to accessing Liberty Talk Radio from our website, you may now access our broadcast from blogtalkradio.com/Liberty Talk Radio. I also encourage you to get educated on economic issues. Go to Andy Sutton's website, mytwocentsonline.com. That's mytwocentsonline.com, and that two is a numeric two. He discusses economic issues and how they affect you. And folks, in this day and age, this is critical. It is critical, and it is necessary that you understand what, in fact, is going on. Without doing so, you will get stuck. I mean, we are heading for a worldwide crisis, in my opinion. I feel very strongly about that. In 1929, they said it would never happen again, and they're right. It will never happen again as it happened then. There was a confluence of events which occurred in 1929 after the stock market crashed that didn't cause it but precipitated the movement in that direction, and government action as well as the restriction of money. And as a result, we went into a severe depression for years, and it was exasperated by more government policies that exasperated the situation. We have this opposite situation today, but one that is just as dangerous. And we have a confluence of events happening again worldwide. Please go to Andy Sutton's website, mytwocentsonline.com, and learn what is going on for real. He is very, very, very good. Right. You can also listen to his commentary on blogtalkradio.com/my2cents. I'm giving him that much airtime because I think it is that important to all of my listeners. Please. Okay. I have just returned from the Florida Keys, and I have a few comments to make about that. A friend of mine begged me to go down to the Florida Keys. He actually got stuck. The people that were supposed to go with him could not make it, and as a result, he got stuck. Went to my wife. He pleaded with my wife, and of course, my wife was delighted to go, so she sort of enlisted me. Let me put it that way. After quite a discussion on that, I wound up going, driving almost 3 days there and 3 days back, and biking for a week. Now, in a way, I was quite excited about going down to the Florida Keys because I had never been there. I thought this would be an experience. Of course, when someone mentions the Florida Keys, it conjures up all sorts of images
of palm trees, manicured grass, beautiful homes on the waterfront, walkways, bike trails, beautiful ocean breeze, you name it. And I said, boy, and you know what, maybe, although I'm not the vacation type, maybe I should do that once in a while. It would be good for me, right? Okay, so we went down there. And he's a very good friend. We got along very well, I think, under the circumstances especially, in going down there. And I think we were complimenting each other very well. And we had a lot of fun going down there. And I think he needed the company anyway. Well, the Florida Keys is sort of like a government program. It sounds awfully good. And when you get there, you are awfully disappointed. And what I mean by that is I expected to go, you know, to be there and be among the palm trees, you know, the scenery, the beautiful homes and all that. And I would be biking on these pristine trails of the beautiful flowers of the South and whatever. And it was exactly the opposite. We wound up on Highway US 1, which is the only road that goes through the Florida Keys, and that includes heavy truck traffic. We are talking 18-wheelers. And for a good portion of the ride, we were on just the shoulder of US 1. The noise was of such a magnitude that the friend that I was with actually suffered a hearing loss. His ears were ringing from the noise. When we camped out at night, and we brought out tents and whatever, when we camped out at night, the Florida Keys, very narrow, and there were very few campsites left because most of them went to condos, which you cannot see from the road, by the way. They have these high walls, and you can't even get in the place. And there are places that you can bike in, and they're pretty houses, some of them pretty houses. And we wound up sleeping on the side of the road, listening to truck traffic. So it was not what I expected. I was incredibly disappointed, but it was sort of like a government program. Here we are, you know, it sounds good, you know, runs bad. It always sounds good, runs bad. You never get what you expect you're going to get. Let me give you an example. We decided one day, excuse me, let me get a squig of coffee. I'm still trying to wake up from all of this. We were by a bus stop. Let's take the bus in. In fact, that bus ride was a real nice bus ride. It gave us a good tour of when we were actually in Key West and toured us through the neighborhood, so we got a better look at how the real people live there. And you realize there are two types of homes there. There are homes that you would not want to live in and homes that you could never afford to live in. And that about describes the Florida Keys. And understand, this is expensive real estate. Real estate is very limited. In a good portion of the bike ride was actually going over bridges. One bridge was a couple of miles long, and one bridge is called a 7-mile bridge. It is 7 miles long. I mean, the cost of connecting those little islands was just phenomenal. And they have to be maintained and all this other stuff. And they get very bad weather down there. You know, hurricanes come through. So there's a lot of maintenance on those. The trails are in horrible condition. Whenever there's bad weather, the trails get blown away, broken up, and whatever. And there's very little effort to fix it from what I've seen. And in many cases, we had to wind up actually going on the biking on the highway because there was no trails. So it was horrible. Anyway, so we took the bus ride into the tourist area and where the restaurants were and whatever. But while waiting for the bus, we were next to a new house on stilts, and it was a beautiful house. It was very, very pretty. And when I say pretty, it was new, it was square, but it was on stilts, and it was a nice color and the whole bit. And I said, and we were trying to guess how much that house cost, because to find a house in the Florida Keys on stilts near the water for less than $1 million, I tell you, you're stretching it, you know, it's really tough. So we're looking at it, and the gate was, there was an opening by the gate, so I went underneath the house and was just looking at it. It was vacant, by the way. It looked like it was for sale. So I went around to the front of the house, and I noticed there was a sign in front of the house. And the house, the sign said, the Monroe County Housing Authority. And I stood there for a second. Monroe County, well, I guess that's Monroe County that we're in, the Florida Keys, Key West, rather, and thought that Housing Authority, what would a Housing Authority be doing on such expensive real estate? So there was a woman there waiting for the bus, too. I said, excuse me. I said, is this subsidized housing? She says, it's, yeah, Section 8. I said, okay. I walked away. And that just about blew my mind. Here we are in the most expensive real estate, probably in the United States, and there is Section 8 housing. Now, just think about that for a second. There's Section 8 housing in some of the most expensive real estate in the United States. Well, the argument there is, well, the poor people or the poorer people deserve a place to live too. That argument holds no water. In fact, my friend said that. He said, well, you know, they got to provide housing for, you know, people who are, you know, less advantaged. And I thought to myself, this is where we've gone totally amok. This is a government program gone amok. If you're in an area that you cannot possibly afford to live there, and folks, I place myself in that category. Now, I'm not poor by any stretch of the imagination, by any definition, I ain't poor. But I don't have the type of money that it takes to live in the Florida Keys. I mean, not decently, at least. The people who live there and have small apartments will pay a minimum of, I think, $1,400 or $1,600 a month up to $2,400 to $3,000 a month for a small apartment. People work two jobs basically just to pay their rent. But they want to live on the Keys. They want to, you know, go boating. They do things there, whatever. And that's fine. But you have the mega wealthy. You have the people working two jobs just to pay their rent. And then you have the, quote, poorer people who are getting state-subsidized money. Now, that is not only that makes no sense, it's very unfair. The house that was a Title VIII house was a beautiful house. I mean, when I looked at it, I said, I could never afford this house. I could not believe it. Now, the answer to the argument that even poor people deserve good housing is that if you elect to live somewhere, you elect to live somewhere that you can afford. Here in Tulsa, there are neighborhoods that are really run down. I mean, you can buy a house for probably $50 and pay the taxes, back taxes on it, and the house is yours, and the land is yours, and you got plenty of nice land, but it's a horrible neighborhood. I mean, it's not a good neighborhood to live in. There are no services and whatever. And, you know, and you can afford to live there, right? There are other neighborhoods where a small lot of land may cost you $1 million. Well, if you can't afford it, you don't go to the government and say, I want to buy this $1 million piece of property. Would you please subsidize me? Now, that makes no sense. And everyone would agree, geez, that makes no sense. That's stupid. Well, that's exactly what we have with Title VIII. If the people cannot afford to live there, they should not be living there. They should be living in an area where the housing is affordable. And there are places in Florida where the housing is affordable and they're nice neighborhoods, but not Key West. So what you do is the government actually creates this economic tension between people by providing beautiful housing, in my opinion, I mean, above average housing to people who have no money. And how do you think the people feel who are working two jobs who have less than adequate housing and receiving no income from the government? Now, the mega wealthy with the yachts and whatever, we'll put them in a separate category. Those are the people who can live there. Now, whether or not they earn their money, they inherited it and whether or not it's fair. That has nothing to do with it. If you can't afford to live there, you don't live there. So what you do is you force low-income people in places where they really can't afford to live. Now, what makes it exasperates the situation is just to eat down there is very expensive. Everything is more expensive. Everything. For everything has to be brought in, you know, transported in. There's just a lot of cost involved. And by virtue of the fact that it's a small island and there's a limited supply of everything, you pay through the nose for everything. It was a real relief getting out of the Florida Keys. I went back to Subway and got the Subway special for $5, and I thought that was great. And that was one quarter of what I was paying on the Florida Keys. My only point being is that I don't live in Hawaii because I cannot afford a house in Hawaii. And I don't go to Hawaii and then say, well, I can't afford a house here, thus the state owes it to me so that I can afford to buy a house in Hawaii. There's another government program gone amok. Government programs which don't should never exist in the first place and just screw up the entire economic supply and demand situation. Okay, well, enough of that. Florida Keys, hope never to go back. Don't recommend it to anyone. Unless you want to go to Key West, fly into Key West, and you're the tourist type person. There's plenty of touristy things to do. I hate touristy things. I will never go back to the Florida Keys, you know, unless there's some extraordinary circumstance. I will not go back. I have no interest in going back. And I'm glad to be back with my radio station. Okay, about 2 weeks ago, I received an email from Jason. And I don't know where Jason is from. And he sent me two emails. He said about a month ago, and this is dated November 6th, so we're getting old on this, and that's because I've been out, and I said I would answer it on a later program. About a month ago, you challenged your listeners to come up with one government service that really works besides law enforcement and defense. And my response to that is that law enforcement does not work. And we have no defense. We have offense. We have a very good offense. We have no or little defense. We have no defense. So I take issue with that, Jason, with all due respect. But let's let that aside. I thought long and hard and wasn't able to come up with much, but here is a small one that I think will stump you. And it did at first, I'll be honest with you. What about those nutrition content labels the FDA requires on the packaging of all processed food? It probably costs food processors a lot of money to get those things, but I think they're worth it. Right, that's his opinion. If they were not required, food processors would be able to put as much sodium, saturated fat, caffeine, and whatever other nastiness they want to get us hooked on in their products. You know, no one would have them if they were not required. Alcoholic products are exempt from this law, and how many nutritional labels you see there? Okay, very good. All right, and then he follows it up, and I think this is a later one. Yes, it's just a few minutes later. He says, oh, one further comment. I'm not trying to defend the FDA. They do some terrible things, especially in regard to prescription drugs. It's just that if healthcare is a matter of personal responsibility, and I believe that it is, how are we supposed to keep ourselves from becoming obese or diabetic if we have no clue of the nutritional content of our food? Okay, all right. I want to start off with a comment that I heard in the Florida Keys. Now, remember I told you we have this perception of the Florida Keys. Excuse me, I'm going to get a little bit more coffee in me. Thank you. We have this perception of the Florida Keys of palm trees and manicured lawn. Couldn't be further from the truth. It was kind of trashy, quite frankly, where we were. And my friend asked, he said, what about the girls on the Florida Keys? You know, are they, you know, you find a lot of pretty girls in the Florida Keys and whatever, you know, and bikinis and stuff like that. And the guy says, well, on the Florida Keys, by and large, the girls are by and large. And, you know, that was our experience. We were surprised because we thought that in the Florida Keys, people, because they're on the beach a lot, they wear bathing suits, they would be at least slender or have at least decent shapes. I mean, most people were obese. But not as bad as Oklahoma, but almost as bad as Oklahoma. I mean, we saw gals wearing bathing suits that they should have been arrested for wearing the bathing suits that they were wearing. I mean, it was horrible. I mean, they looked horrible. And I just, to throw a towel on yourself, I can't look, you know. You don't want to look that way. And they had no right, you know. This was visual pollution as far as I was concerned. They were so obese. And most of the girls were that way. And he was right. By and large, they're by and large. Well, my point is this, is that we have nutritional labels now. And the United States is going through an epidemic of obesity. Now, how does, you know, before we had nutritional labeling, we didn't have this epidemic. Now, I am not attributing the labeling to the obesity. Please don't go there. What I'm saying is that if we're saying, you know, how do we prevent ourselves from becoming obese, you know, if we don't have no clue of the nutritional content of food, well, with the FDA, we have a clue of the nutritional content of food. And yes, we are in the most obese nation in the world. In fact, I think the state of Oklahoma takes the prize as having the most obese people in the United States. In fact, I think Tulsa or Oklahoma City, one of those two, were basically the fattest cities in the United States. And we have nutritional labeling on everything. So there is really no connection between labeling and health. Now, let's take a company like McDonald's. Now, there is no one in good conscience that would say that the McDonald's hamburger or Big Mac or the Egg McMuffin is good for you. Now, you can find the nutritional labeling for that. They have these little brochures that they hand out. It tells you the saturated fat and whatever, all right? And yet, you see anyone reading them? No. And if they did read them, what should they do? Not go to McDonald's. If people were concerned, they wouldn't go to McDonald's. McDonald's is doing very well. The stock on McDonald's has tripled recently. They're doing extremely well. They're busy all the time. People are eating there almost daily. And yet, their foods are packed with saturated fats, triglycerides, all the best, you know, trans fats, you name it, they've got it. And yet, if you look at the way we eat today, which restaurants are packed? Well, all the fast food franchises, you know, and I'm not just picking on McDonald's, I'm saying all of them, the McDonald's, the Burger Kings, the Wendy's, look at, they just came out, my son called me while I was in the Florida Keys, and he was laughing, one of the fast food franchises, I'm not sure if it was Burger King or one of those things, they came out with a super hamburger. It was two, like, one-third patties and bacon and whatever, and it had, I think the hamburger had over 2,200 calories. It had 400 times the amount of saturated fat for the day. I mean, you name it, it was a killer. This thing was a heart stopper, and I wish I had the exact labeling because it would have been interesting for this program. And it was an overwhelming success. And they had someone interview people about the burger and mention that, well, did you know it had, you know, 2,200 calories? It had enough saturated fat to stop your heart. It, you know, it went on, you know, with the bacon and all this other stuff and the mayonnaise and triglycerides. And by and large, people were angry that they was brought up. They argued with them. And basically the response from the general public was, you know, I like a good hamburger, I like meat, I'm a man, you know, I don't like this, you know, wussy stuff, you know. And they gave him the interviewer a really hard time. I mean, they were angry. So please spare me the fact that if we didn't have nutritional labeling, you know, now there is nutritional labeling, but you have to look for it, you have to ask for it. I mean, it's not on the hamburger itself. It's not on the wrapper. You have to get this little brochure they have on the side, and usually the little bin is empty, and you have to ask for it, and they can't find it half the time. But you can find it. And if you looked at it, that dudes, if you had a half a brain cell working, you would never eat it. Now, that's subject number one. Subject number two, the Constitution does not vest the government with the right to tell manufacturers how to label their food. As far as I'm concerned, labeling is an unconstitutional act by the FDA. Now, they may suggest it, but they cannot require it. Not by our Constitution, but that's down the water underneath the bridge. Our federal government does things that the Constitution did not permit it to do. And it happens every day, and it's getting worse. We all know that. And we all know that we've gone down the slippery slope. So that's another point. Right? Here's another one. There is a difference. I read an interesting article about FDA labeling in preparation of this, and they said there's a difference between knowledge and information. And what the labels give you is information. They tell you so many calories from fat. So many calories, and then so many calories from fat, so many saturated. But it's so what? I mean, if in fact it was, if you have something that's, let's say, 300 calories and 50 calories are from fat, that's information. That's not knowledge because you don't know what to do with that. What does that tell you? Well, you can say, well, I like to get the stuff that's low as possible. And then they have saturated fats, and then are the rest polyunsaturated fats? Are they hydrogenated polyunsaturated fats, or are they cold-pressed polyunsaturated fats? In other words, ones that congeal in your system and ones that don't. They don't tell you that. They don't tell you what proportion of monounsaturated fats. Now, they have been forced to label the trans fats. But here's my point. First of all, that's information. It's not knowledge. People who are nutritionally savvy, if you will, don't need labeling. We know that if we buy a can of vegetables, there's going to be a high salt content. We know that. Now, where do you get the information? Practically anywhere. And companies that want to sell their products as being better than somebody else, they want to differentiate themselves, the marketplace will handle the nutritional labeling. They'll say, ours is low in fat, so it's 1%, and they will give you all the information you need in order to entice you to buy that product. If not, people won't buy it. Now, for the rest of the population, and probably 90% of the population, they don't care. So whether or not there's nutritional labeling there or not is immaterial. Just think of that super-duper hamburger of 2,200 calories sold like hotcakes. No one cared. And if you brought it up to them, they got angry. So it really didn't make any difference. Anyway, so that's my answer. Keep the federal government out. My wife is an audiologist. She's not a nutritionist, but that's her sideline. I mean, she just does it for fun. And she probably knows more about nutrition than practically anybody that I know. She's always reading. She's read every book in the world. She is really up on omega-3, omega-6, omega-9, and all this other stuff. And we find that cholesterol now is not the culprit. It's the lack of omega-3 and the deficiency of omega-3 and the excess of omega-6 that's causing most of our problems. And it'll take the FDA 10 years to get that labeling on there, if ever. Enough said. Thank you very much. Well, at least I answered your question. And with that, we're going to end today's program. We want to see you Sunday evening. We'll be on air again at 6:30 in the evening. And we're going to have a half-hour program. And please check our blog to determine what the subject will be. Okay? This is the end of today's broadcast. We'd like to thank Ranch Acres Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends. And let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. That's comments@libertytalkradio.com. Or our phone is 903-551-2186. That's while we're off the air. Remember, you are either allowing your liberties to be taken away, or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there's no middle ground. And remember, don't steal. The government hates competition. Until next time, stay well, stay tuned, and I hope to hear from you Sunday evening, 8 p.m., this coming Sunday evening. And that would be on November 25th. Okay, I'll see you then.